Madam Speaker, it's a good bill.
Frankly, I'm embarrassed.
The President of the Senate called a hot mess.
Oley Insider is an educational journey through the Washington State Legislature, following interesting and important bills through the legislative process.
This is a serious matter, Mr. Speaker. We're moving the wrong direction here.
Oley Insider is produced by Positive Intentions Media, hosted by citizen volunteers Erica Engelhart and Jay Fratt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, rising in support.
And it's the right thing to do.
All right, we are back, the ever consistent Oley Insider podcast. I am Jay Fratt. I am with my partner in legislation, Erica Engelhart.
Hey, everybody. How are you doing? How are you doing, Jay?
I'm doing okay. If you can hear it in my voice, I still am a little stuffed up. I've got this minor cold that will not go away, but that's all right. I don't have the vades.
That is no fun. I had it also, so I'm finally over it. So probably just a couple days away.
Wait, you didn't have the vades. You don't got the vades. You got
to. No, I had a cold.
Yeah, exactly. You got to take the V to get the vades. All right. So there's the most controversial part of this show. We just get that away right out of the way, so you can tell who we are. And we're watching the legislature. We are participating. We've got four different bills we're going to talk about in this particular episode. Right away, the first two bills are super easy. SB 5000 is the nickname, the evergreen state legislation that started in the Senate. It's made its way to the House. And Erica, I can't report on anything that happened in the House because the hearing went by so fast. It was an easy breeze.
Wow. Why is that?
I think that it's just going to fly through. The only thing that happened in the hearing was Senator Jeff Wilson, the primary sponsor, spoke on behalf of the bill. Nobody signed in to testify. They gaveled in, they gaveled out, and on SB 5000 goes to the executive session in the House.
When is that scheduled?
The tribal committee. Committee on Government and Tribal Relations. Well, let's look that up.
Gotcha.
You're asking me a surprise question. I'll try to be on my toes. Scheduled for executive session in the House Committee on State Government and Tribal Relations at 8 a.m. March 21st. There we go.
March 21st. I
didn't have to use an AI voice for that one.
No problem.
And I think that you said something earlier in the week that was a bit psychic. You said, it's our first bill that's going to pass. And no, our next bill is actually the first one. But I think you're outside of confinement, outside of time, predicting that Governor Ferguson, the first bill that he is going to sign into law this session, I think it's going to be SB 5000, and I think you called it earlier this week.
Wouldn't that be interesting that one of our bills that we picked from the very beginning could be the first one on his desk?
Well, I'm sorry. I might have to take you to a Ready Check Medical Center or a hospital for breaking your arm, patting yourself on the back. I felt it. But yeah, 6 out of 12. We followed as complete noobs, injecting ourselves into the legislature to train ourselves. I had an insider tell me, you need to pick more bills. You don't realize how many bills will not pass. You're going to have nothing. Well, two noobs like us, maybe we are a little highly capable, 6 out of 12 have passed through the original House of Origin. So good job to us at Oley Insider. It's why we're doing this podcast. But let's keep this show flowing because we've got four bills. We're going to get rid of the two quick ones, but I have no idea how long the next two are going to take. So the next one,
Can I interrupt you?
Of course.
Okay, so I just want to clarify that all the bills that we picked aren't necessarily bills that we're a fan of. So sometimes if they die, it's probably a good thing, but we're just talking for the sake of, following along the process. So we're happy that our bills are they were still able to follow them along, not necessarily that they're still active.
Absolutely. And I think that if you followed us from the beginning, there were bills that we clearly liked that we wanted to see move forward. I can think of three. I can think of Fortunato trying to relieve elderly people,
yes,
of property tax. That died. I don't even know if that was ever heard in hearing. You had the Empower Ed brought to by Travis Couture. Jim Walsh was a co-sponsor on that one. That one died. You had the one that was going to protect women, incarcerated women, from dudes in dresses in prison jumpers that were convicted previously of harm to women and sexual violence. That was never heard in committee. So there were a few bills that we had picked that we had liked that did die an awful death. And yes, some that we did not like, of course, that were agnostic when it comes to the bills we selected on whether we liked them or not. We just thought that they were either important or interesting. That was our criteria, important or interesting to start.
100%.
So this bill, which confused us. So HB 1018, this is that FSEC bill. It's an agency request bill from FSEC. That's the, Energy Facility Site Evaluation Council, that's trying to get fusion energy listed as available. People who want to site a fusion energy project, creating the FSEC pathway as a possibility to them getting approved. That one was great for us in the beginning of this podcast many episodes ago, because we learned a little bit more about agency request bills, interviewed those people. Well, that just flew right through the House. And something happened this week that I was very confused about. It immediately went to executive session in the Senate. And you and I talked about this, and we really didn't understand why. I've got a quick clip from this executive session committee hearing, and we're going to discuss.
So we're probably going to do the agenda a little bit out of order, as we have some prime sponsors here this morning. And then we have an executive session on one bill pursuant to Rule 49. So,
and that bill that they were talking about, that's subject to Rule 49, is HB 1018.
What in the world is Rule 49?
Well, it's very interesting. I looked it up because I was like, okay, it missed a public hearing. It's in executive session. And right there she says, subject to Rule 49. Rule 49 is a bill. It's a rule that states a bill may not be referred to Rules Committee unless there is a public hearing. Except the official companion has already been heard. So there was an official companion bill to HB 1018 that was already heard by this committee and had already passed through committee. So in this executive session, they adopted one amendment to strike one line, one clarification. And in doing so, by doing that, it matched exactly the bill that passed out of the House. And so they just ushered that bill along with a do pass recommendation. And so HB 1018, as much as we love the evergreen state nickname of SB 5000, HB 1018 is the furthest along of all the bills that we started tracking at Ole Insider. It has now received a do pass recommendation right away in the Senate after passing through the House. So it is the closest of all our bills to getting to the governor's
desk.
It's
our first runner up.
First runner up, I guess. Well, it's in the lead right now. And
that's what I mean, yeah.
we suspect SB 5000 will jump it.
All right, Jay. So let's get to the meat and potatoes of this episode.
Okay.
One of our bills, SB 5123, the inclusivity bill, just had a public hearing in the House committee, because it's already passed through the Senate.
Yes.
So we both were participated in that hearing today. But just to remind our viewers, let's play that clip from the, what was that office?
OPR, Office of Program Research.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Let's play that clip to remind our viewers what this bill is all about.
Thank you. And good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Ethan Moreno, nonpartisan staff, speaking to Substitute Senate Bill 5123, as you indicated. By way of background, discrimination in Washington public schools on the basis of delineated protected classes, including sex, race, religion, national origin, sexual orientation, gender expression or identity, or the presence of a sensory, mental, or physical disabilities is prohibited. The Superintendent of Public Instruction is charged with developing rules and guidelines to eliminate discrimination as applies to public school employment, counseling and guidance services to students, recreation and athletic activities for students, access to course offerings and in textbooks and instructional materials. The OSPI is required to monitor local compliance with non-discrimination provisions, and the superintendent has the power to enforce and obtain compliance with state laws and guidelines prohibiting discrimination by instituting corrective action, terminating the offended program, placing the school district on probation, or withholding state funds. Any person who is aggrieved by a violation of the non-discrimination provisions or aggrieved by a violation of any rule or guideline adopted in accordance with those provisions has a right of action in Superior Court. Turning to the bill before you this afternoon, the following protected classes are added to the non-discrimination provisions that apply in Washington's public schools, and those are ethnicity, homelessness, immigration or citizenship status, and neurodivergence. Additionally, the protected class of sexual orientation, including gender expression or identity, is separated into three classes: sexual orientation, gender expression, and gender identity. Definitions are also provided for seven protected classes that apply in public schools, and those are listed for you in the bill report itself. With that, I will conclude my remarks, but I'm happy to respond to questions.
All right, so there is the bill brief. Just to remind everybody what bill we're talking about, this inclusivity bill, SB 5123, that passed through the Senate. I was a little surprised it passed through the Senate, but there it is. It's in the House now. Which, how do you perceive the House and the Senate, Erica? I perceive the Senate to be a little bit more mature, a little bit more, I don't want to use the word conservative, but a little more cautionary, whereas I perceive the House to be a little bit more liberal, a little bit more activist.
I do agree with that, and I think actually quite a few people might agree with that, that the, you know, the House will pass anything kind of thinking versus the Senate would be a little bit harder to get through. So the fact that it did get through the Senate first is a little, alarming, but they did have a lot of people, you know, testifying, just like in this hearing, they brought in a lot of people. Something they said, there was like 90 people signed up to testify when they started this hearing.
Yes.
So, you know, if they bring in the right people to say the right things, then...
Well, and there is a lot of confusion on this particular bill, and it comes out in the clips that we've recorded. Let's get to the first one. This is the emotional plea. So we lead off with somebody giving testimony, and let's just get to it. It kind of speaks for itself.
To try to be clear before I get red-lighted or played off, who am I? Again, my name's Dan. I'm the father of a trans son. That's a big part of it. What do I want? I would like to pass SB 5123 to expand the number of kids formally protected from discrimination in the state of Washington. Why do I want it? Well, because hopefully the day after it's passed, my kid would be a little safer than the day before it's passed.
As you can hear in his voice, this dad of a trans student became very emotional in his pleading to get 5123 passed. He continued on, and we're going to chop it up a bit and move to the end. He started talking about groups of the different groups of people that exist in our society, and there was a group three that he was pointing out, and I'm going to let him finish with his thought there.
We know that this has been hard. Please continue with your thought.
There's so much and so many examples. I knew I couldn't even touch them. Group three are people who apparently hate my kid. They would like my kid to die. They would like my kid to never have been born. and they're going to be probably much better speakers who are totally optimistic, and it will say, you can't change who someone is. You can, if you're willing to be that sort of person, if you're willing to hit the kid until they stop crying, if you're willing to hit the kid until they can't get up anymore, if you're willing to hit the kid until they die, you can stop anyone from being anything, because we're not born bulletproof. There's only so much people can take. So I hope you pass the bill. And I have my kids in a supportive school district, and it's still hard. And there are a lot of other kids in a lot of other classes. They aren't my kids. They still deserve protection. They're still kids. There's a group three out there. I don't understand them. I wish they'd be genuine with who they are, what they want, why they want it. But they want my kid not to exist. So I would like my kid to feel a little safer the day after you pass it than the day before.
Okay, so after I heard this testifier, which, by the way, was the first person to testify, I was thinking, is this how this whole hearing is going to go with all of these people testifying? You know, he was really kind of went to a dark place, in my opinion, with that testimony, talking about people who want to see his trans child dead. You know, I've never seen or heard anything like this from anyone about this kind of subject, but you know, he really took it to a dark place, but luckily not everyone had the same opinion. So let's go ahead and jump to the next testifier. And what was her name, Jay?
Jan. And Jan actually quotes me. I don't get credit for the
such an honor.
I don't get credit for the quote, but Jan quotes me, and maybe that's why I pulled her clip. But I thought she was poignant in some of her points as a member of the public, concerned enough to testify. And I agree with you. It seemed dark. It's the programming was actually coming out where, you know, it's almost like these ghoulish characters, you know, that are in these closets just waiting to kill these trans kids and trans adults, which we're in a right-leaning cohort, and we don't hear that at all.
Well, and one other thing, isn't, you know, killing people already a crime? So I'm not understanding how this bill would address that fear of his, but you know, that's okay.
Yes, it's a very logical, common sense point that you make up, and good on some of our representatives in the committee, because they make that point also that we will get to. Let's hear from Jan, who quotes me without credit, but gives good testimony.
Hi, my name is Dawn Land, and I am asking the committee to please vote no.
Oh, I guess it's Dawn. It's not Jan. If you give me credit for those quotes, Dawn, then I won't call you Jan.
On Senate Bill 5123, this is primarily a bill of definitions, but some of the definitions are inaccurate. An individual's sexual orientation refers to same-sex attraction, opposite-sex attraction, or an attraction to both the male or female, male and female sex. Sexual orientation is based entirely on our biological sex, either male or female. One cannot identify their way into a different physical state of being, and to suggest that a lesbian must consider a male who claims he's a woman as an intimate partner is homophobic and misogynistic. We cannot give special rights or give extra rights to a special class, especially when it takes rights away from others, like women. The 5123's definition of sexual orientation is also contrary to federal regulations as of January 20th, 2025. To pass this as law jeopardizes federal funding of the government schools of Washington State. I'm asking you to please support girls especially and vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Okay, there was Dawn giving great testimony in the House committee today and making very good points. You mentioned something earlier, Erica. You said, which is also common sense and logical, hey, aren't all these kids protected already? Well, Representative Matt Marshall from the 2nd Legislative District brought that up.
I guess my question will start with, you know, enumerated rights are codified not in statute, but in the Constitution of the United States, and has been further interpreted by the Supreme Court. I would make the assumption that we all agree that persons should not be discriminated against, that they should not be subject to bullying, harassment, assault, or be afraid wherever they're at. These are all things that I see as currently in statute. So my question is, what other than changing a definition do any of you panelists see as changing because of this bill?
I would like to offer a quote from Romer v. Evans, in which the Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy said, "Enumeration is the essential device used to make the duty to not discriminate concrete and to provide guidance for those who must comply." The reality is when a group of individuals is not protected as an enumerated class, they do not have protections and they do not have legal basis for fighting against hatred, discrimination, and violence, because they would no longer be considered a protected class.
An interesting retort to Matt Marshall's very, very well-founded common sense question. What did you think of that back and forth?
I did appreciate it, you know, just because she did have an answer. You know, it seems like a lot of times people don't have that follow-up answer, but she was definitely prepared with one. But, you know, I can't help but wonder also, so this bill is specifically talking about schools. So how can there be a protected class only in schools? Then what happens when they graduate? Are they no longer a protected class? I'm confused about that part.
It's a great point. And yes, it is about schools because they talk about the Office of OSPI. Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. Oh my gosh, we're into the weeds now where I didn't even know these offices existed 10 years ago, and now I can tell you what all these abbreviations stand for. Anyways, yes, it is about schools. I'm going to tell you at the heart of it what it means to me, because I think all these kids have rights, is at some point, or at least they're protected. I mean, there's already anti-bullying laws. We've got all kinds of laws to protect these kids. What this is doing is this is setting up codification of boys playing in girls' sports. And it's mentioned when the OPR staff read the analysis of the bill. It is specifically talking about athletics. And that's where we have this conundrum of creating special rights. And as she just discussed, in superior court. So a student, a protected class that's able to go to court and then sue because they've been discriminated upon. But how then does a female student not have that same right and availability?
Protection,
availability. I mean, we've got Title IX. Joe Biden changed Title IX. Trump changed Title IX back to being just girls, biological girls. So it's like Washington is living in an alternative reality, and they're trying to codify this alternative reality for Washington state citizens. And I was impressed also with the answer. That was somebody testifying. That was not a representative. There is, I will tell you from sitting through this hearing now a couple times, working on the editing and the audio and all that, these representatives are also confused about this bill. And I'm speaking about the Democrat representatives. And they end up throwing somebody under the bus, and we'll get to that in the end. But I thought this was a particular good question, trying to set this up. This is Representative Reeves.
Question for staff, Representative Reeds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Staff, can you please remind me if anywhere in this underlying legislation, the addition of these protected classes would take away rights from underlying already identified protected classes such as women or people of color?
The bill, Representative Reeves, doesn't speak to things at that level. It just adds specific protected classes to the list that currently exists in statute.
Thank you. So just for clarification, Ethan, what I heard you say is the list is additive, not subtractive.
That is correct, based
Thank
on
you.
Legislation.
So you can see them setting it up there that oh, we're just adding protective classes. They are completely oblivious to the negating, the butting of heads that is going to occur between protected classes. And then just to go back really quick, I brought up athletics, but, you know, non-discrimination, that includes lots of things like chess club. You know, there's all kinds of academic activities where this type of law would come in and specifically points out you can't discriminate against these classes.
Even in restroom use, for example.
Well, okay, there you go. There's an explosive end to this that, again, they're not seeing as they make this point that it's additive. And their point is accurate, but they're not looking around the corner to see the conflict that will occur.
Exactly. You know, I'm having a hard time understanding how they don't see this conflict, because it seems so clear, and I hope to many others it seems clear also. Sure, they're adding to protected classes, but to whose detriment? You know, an already protected class of women or girls. So it's hard for me to understand where they're coming from on all of this. But there was a lot of other testimony that happened as well. So if we want to get into the scientific side, let's go ahead and listen to this other gentleman. He was from PFLAG, and I don't recall his name. What was his name, Jay?
I think it was Peyton, but we've already learned the tough lesson of relying on Jay remembering names.
Let's just say the guy from PFLAG then.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I represent PFLAG, a national nonprofit that advocates on behalf of the LGBTQ+ community. On behalf of PFLAG chapters throughout Washington State, we urge you to pass this bill out of committee. Washington State is a beacon of hope in dark times for our community. Our youth deserve to know that each and every one of them has a place and deserves to belong in our schools. This is what we stand for as an organization. I would also just like to make a comment about one of the panelists that talked about there being two genders.
That's right. For context, earlier, it did not get clipped for this particular show, but a young Republican gentleman by the name of Anthony Mixer gave public testimony where he stated that there are only two genders in his testimony. So this gentleman from PFLAG is referring to that.
I do a talk called The Science of Gender, and I've done a ton of research, and I would really encourage folks to take a look at that 23rd pair of chromosomes that's responsible for the formation of sexual anatomy that tells you what your birth certificate's going to say, and you will see that there aren't just two combinations of those chromosomes. There are 16 different combinations, and every single one has an impact on sexual anatomy and development. It's very complicated, and to try and boil it down into a boilerplate kind of thing that says, oh, there's two genders, is simply defying science and doing tremendous harm, particularly to our trans and gender expansive students. Thank you.
All right. Now, there are a couple things that really bother me about this testimony, Erica, and the first one I want to discuss is conflation. It is a tool of propaganda, and I'm not saying he's purposely disseminating propaganda. However, I've seen this on a national level also, where activists are conflating real medical issues surrounding sexual organs and gender with children, youths with gender dysphoria, what is labeled in the CAS review as a mental condition, a mental illness. I don't want to say illness, but it's a distressing, real phenomenon that they have to deal with, right? We're not saying this isn't real, this gender dysphoria. However, they keep activists are conflating a real scientific anomaly way out there on the histogram scale. It's an extreme outlier of these conditions, these real medical conditions. They're conflating that and those people with students and youths with gender dysphoria. Do you see how he's doing that there?
Yes, I 100% agree with that. And it is frustrating because, you know, he's talking about people that are born with a certain, chromosome pattern or whatever. And we're talking about people who are deciding that they no longer want to identify as that, whatever they were born with, right? So it is two completely different things, but he does a really good job at kind of mushing them together.
That's right. Then the other thing, this is about bureaucracy. This is about being in Washington State and money. I looked up PFLAG. PFLAG gets grants from Washington State. So we are witnessing an organization that gets government funding, grant funding, and then that organization is now giving public testimony and essentially lobbying the legislature to, justify their existence in some ways. And this bothers me a little bit when it comes to the money, because it's a self-perpetuating cycle then, this virtuous cycle, this victim is champion, raising up of these outlier issues that we shouldn't be codifying law on outliers, right?
It sort of feels like a downward spiral.
We're in the downward spiral right now in Washington State, and we're just waiting for the people to recognize the common sense questions that are being asked instead of hyperbolizing the honest, common sense, logical questions by stating that people like you and I or others want to kill or eliminate trans, which is so far from the truth. But you hear from that dad's emotional testimony that he truly has been programmed to believe that there are people out there that don't want them to exist.
That's really sad.
So,
you know, that he can believe this.
Yeah, and who knows? Like, there probably are outlier examples of hate, but if you just follow social media, people are popping off saying things all the time. You, as an adult, you have to learn when you're participating with internet anonymous characters that are spouting off opinions that you're going to get a lot of trolling and a lot of BS, right? But when it comes to real life, like in real life, we're all protected by laws. Now, we may complain that these laws aren't being enforced by our legislators and our police force and our district attorneys, but those laws still exist. We don't need more laws from people on social media just because people on social media are saying mean things. The other thing is he has a child that's in schools. Kids are mean. I'm sorry. You and I, I think you might be Gen Y, I'm Gen X, but growing up's a tough thing, not just for trans kids or kids with gender dysphoria or kids that are awkward or kids that have a different sexual proclivity. Growing up's difficult for all kids.
It is. It's very, yes, everyone has their own experience and their own troubles, but yes, I agree.
We don't need the state to swoop in with a cape to protect every single person, because what happens then is that caped crusader ends up stepping on other people. And in this case, what we're trying to point out is stepping on the rights of women and girls. All right, the last clip we've got is a back and forth where Representative Joel McIntyre from, I believe the 19th Legislative District, seatmate to Jim Walsh, the chair of the Washington GOP and legislator himself, goes in and asks a question of the PFLAG constituent.
Very good, Madam Chair. Mr. Jordan, I just need a little bit of clarification. I'm only permitted to ask
a question of you, so I'm going to just clarify what I think you were trying to get at, and then you can acknowledge if I'm correct or not, about the 23rd set of chromosomes, that there are, 16 variations that there can be. Those variations include males and females, but those variations of the 23rd chromosome are syndromes of non-disjunction from the metaphase and meiosis. So that, though no one disagrees that those things can happen on the 23rd chromosome, it is still binary that you will get males or females based on if there is the presence of a Y chromosome and the activation of the SRY gene. Is that what you were trying to say?
That's an interesting question, because when you look at the many variations in the 23rd pair of chromosomes, we are still only looking at chromosomes. Chromosomes is only one factor in how we get assigned a gender at birth, because at birth, nobody knows what the gender of that baby is. They know what their genitals look like. And then you have a whole host of kids who are born with ambiguous genitals where you really don't know what their genitals are. And those particular kids are dealt with in a whole different kind of way and often assigned a gender that may not even match the gender that they are. Kids don't begin to demonstrate gender till around the ages of 3, 4, and 5. That's when you actually get a better idea of who this kid is. That can match the birth certificate or not. Can also have kids who have mixed sexual reproductive systems. They're one way on the inside and one way on the outside. What do we do with those kids?
All right. Thank you, expert from PFLAG. So he touched on something that kind of upsets me right off the bat again. And this is why so many lesbians and gays have started to come out against this trans ideology that's sweeping our state. And that is right there, he says it, where a tomboy doesn't exist. That girl is actually a boy. Or that lesbian doesn't exist. That girl is actually a boy. And we're Fonzie jumping the shark right now when it comes to progressive ideas on inclusivity.
Yeah, that's just a step too far for sure. I mean, I thought we were already too far, but for anyone who hadn't, I hope that they would think that that's too far, because I know when I was a kid, you know, I had boy cousins and I would run around with the boys and I liked to, you know, play soccer and play in the mud and do everything they liked to do, but that didn't make me a boy, you know, so that's craziness.
Yeah. All right, I think we've put this to bed at this point. I'll give a stat really quick. It's not an exact stat, but if you'd like to lend your voice to this particular bill, this is SB 5123, and people have already made their voices heard. There are around 1,000 people that have signed in and issued a pro vote for this bill, and there are around 2,000 people that have signed in to the Washington State Legislature website, clicked on the bill 5123, and issued a con perspective on this particular bill. Now it moves to the executive session, and this is Ole Insider, so I already have breaking news where I've spoke with members of the committee that is hearing this particular bill, and there are a ton of amendments that are already being planned to tack on to this bill. But I hope if the public makes their voices heard, that some of these Democrats that are a little confused by the issue change their minds and don't send this bill to the Rules Committee. Send us out, Erica. What do you think on this whole issue?
I would be happy to see this bill have no more attention and go nowhere. But I don't know if that's the reality because it's made it this far. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, and we covered this bill when it was going through the Senate. You in particular paid close attention to the bill. And if I'm not mistaken, one thing that came up briefly in all of these testimonies and discussion was the fact that it's outside of federal guidelines. And I use the word conflict when it comes to the rights of one class of person versus another class of person. Well, we're going to be in conflict with federal guidelines as well. So talk about talk about losing funding, lawsuits. It's a giant mess, this legislation, what they're stepping into.
Absolutely. It really is a mess. And it would take up so many resources for us just to, you know, as a state to defend it against the federal guidelines and everything that would come with that.
All right. It's the longest episode so far of the Ole Insider podcast. I hope you stuck with us. Thank you for supporting us by listening, by sharing. We'll see you on the next episode. I know we've got a committee hearing coming up on public guns. SB 5098 is being heard in the House. That's going to cause quite a kerfuffle. So we'll be there to cover that.
Absolutely. Have a great day, everybody.
Let us take a step back and let us reason together.
The legislative process can be intimidating. Let's go through it together.
If you could focus on the policy and not motives, please proceed.
Like and subscribe to Ole Insider on your favorite podcasting app. All resources and show notes will be available for each episode at oleinsider.com.
Mr. Speaker, I've stood up on the House floor repeatedly this year.
You can follow Erica Engelhart on X at For the Good, Jay Fratt on X at Jay Fratt, and Positive Intentions Media on X at PubSec Media.
It is our duty.
I really want to say thank you.